everybody. It's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Well, hello, and welcome back to the monthly event, the one and the only we wait for desperately, with the one and the only Dr. Haim. This is Climb to Your Prime with Dr. Haim, our fifth season. I think this is our fourth or fifth this year. I think I've lost count. We had a couple of months off, but you know, we've caught up since then. But again, this is time for mental health. So any one of you that wants to chime in, you guys can dial in the number and or you can just literally just join us via YouTube, Instagram, and even I'm on TikTok. Dr. Haim is not with me on TikTok, but we are live. So if someone comes in there with some comments, I can bring him in here and we can have some answers. I do have a list of things that we're going to cover. And again, this is you're really time to get your answers for whatever. And we get all kind of questions from all over the world. So there's no shame in the game, right, Doctor?
Never any shame, Hurricane. Always fun and joy. But life is serious, okay? And we got to use the fun and joy to keep ourselves healthy, keep our brain going, and to find meaning in life, Hurricane. That's why we do some of these things.
And you know what? I have to say, personally, and you know, we're going to get into the questions. You know, this is a show that we started almost 5 years ago, actually, literally 5 years ago. And I have learned a lot from it personally, that, you know, a lot of things I apply. So it is, you know, really something that you can take to the bank. And we have the whole playlist. I mean, if you missed it, you can go to Spotify or you can listen to iHealth Radio live, you know, and download the app and listen to it there. And or you can just, you know, go to YouTube and just watch the whole playlist with Dr. Haim from the beginning to now. And thousands of questions, I would say. Well, maybe, yeah, close enough. I think in five seasons, I think we've hit quite a bit of numbers there. Maybe not a thousand, but a lot of questions and different levels and angles. If you think about it, we probably covered it. And even if we did, there's certainly more time and more room to actually reiterate some of these things, because reinforcement is key, right, Doctor?
Repetition is the way to learn. That's how the brain works, Hurricane. And we humans can use repetition to our advantage or our disadvantage. We can get quite mechanical. So every now and again, we've got to keep our conscious brains creatively working for us so that we make choices that will move us into the future that we want.
All right. Well, so that's it, folks. We're going to get started. So, Doctor, I have an interesting question. I'm going to start with this one because it is from a movie.
All right. Okay.
You know, so I think it's pretty interesting. Last time, I think you and I, we spoke about an experiment in one of the questions. And I think so this is a similar thing, you know, so that's why I decided to maybe just, you know, start with it. But I'm going to put it up. It's two, maybe three pieces here, but it's, you're probably going to recognize this movie. It's an oldie but goodie. So here we go. In the film Trading Places, two wealthy men conduct a social experiment by swapping the lives of a street hustler, Billy Valentine, played by Eddie Murphy, and a wealthy broker, Lewis Winthorpe, and so played by Dan Aykroyd, without their consent. How does this forced social experiment impact the mental health and identity of both characters, and what does the film suggest about psychological effects of sudden socioeconomic changes? Dan, NYC. Damn, that's a very heavy one.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's actually a really heavy question. And firstly, Hurricane, I need to say I have not seen the movie Trading Places, right? So I don't know what the movie says about that, because the beautiful thing about movies, aside from them being a lot of fun, and we get to learn things. So they get to explore something that's actually very curious, very interesting, something that we can not only enjoy but learn from. So I have not seen that movie. So my ideas on this are going to come straight off the top of my head. And the first thing that I've got to talk about is the difference that has come into some people's lives who have, let's say, had a windfall. They've won the lottery. They've come into a lot of money very quickly. And the interesting thing about the evidence on this, and this evidence comes from the 1980s, is it doesn't change them as much as we would think that they would, that it would. Okay, so the first thing that doesn't change is happiness levels. So somebody, let's say, who has won, let's make it $5 million, for weeks, for months, they're having the time of their life. They're having a great time. But what can happen is eventually you will end up back on the same happiness level because your brain has not changed. It's only your external circumstances that have changed, all right? Now, I haven't seen the movie Trading Places, but I have known people to go from a really wonderful life to something really bad happening. So people who have found themselves in a wheelchair after an accident, and all that they were doing was biking on a Saturday afternoon. For about 6 months again, their life is hell. They often want to end their life. But what happens is they get back up to their same happiness levels because their brain has not changed. After making the adjustment, people still are who they are. And look, these are actual people that I have treated. These are people who I have sat in a room with, and we have spoken through things really deeply. So, Hurricane, I know I'm going from the entertainment of a movie, which would take it a bit deeper than this, but I'm going to real life, to what really happens, because we sometimes think that if only our external circumstances would change, then we would change. But the evidence is actually against that. We actually need to grow, is a word I like to use rather than change, gradually. So we'd all like to go from the poverty to the riches, but we've got to grow into that. So in other words, it's not good having $1 million. What you've got to do is actually become a millionaire. And that actually takes a mindset that you've got to grow into. So a question like, what would I actually do if I had $100 million? What would my life look like? What would I contribute to the world? And you start growing into that. And I this is more your area, Hurricane, you know, sort of the motivational coaching. But from a brain perspective, your brain is your brain, and growth happens slowly. And we can get into the brain if you like, but I thought I'd hand it over to you now, Hurricane.
Well, so there's a couple of things. So, well, first of all, I thought you probably seen the movie. I mean, it's just an 80s classic, especially with Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd. I mean, I've seen that movie many times. And okay, but just to give you a little kind of summary of it quickly. So really, the movie is about these two Wall Street guys who trade in commodities. Yeah. You know, they're rich and it's Duke, and so their family name, and they got their own prejudices, if you want to call it that, or whatever. I mean, the movie kind of depicts a little bit of that. But and then there's this dude who is a very wealthy young man, very how can I say, successful in that trade business and one of the best, and they have this private club, blah, blah, blah. But then there's Eddie Murphy, who's the character that's playing, you know, the poor guy or the beggar and whatever, the guy that's hustling in the streets. Anyway, so they, the two Dukes, the two brothers decide that, you know, they bet against each other for a dollar, you know, that they're going to ruin the life of the one that's successful and see what the other guy's going to, you know, make out of him changing into a better life. And basically the deal was, the one that was rich probably going to turn into a criminal, and the one that is criminal will probably remain a criminal no matter what. So kind of like, yeah, that's the, so basically there are two people who are wealthy and they just decide to play with people's life. So for me, that itself, I mean, that's a psychological piece. We need to talk about that in a minute, because I think something is wrong there. But then also the fact that, you know, the two characters, you know, they literally felt the opposite. Although the way it's depicted, that the guy that was a hustler became a lot more, he was smart, he just didn't have a good luck in his life, right? Sure. So he immediately adjusted to the new life, and the other one couldn't. So the one that actually adjusted, you know, was from the street, was able to adjust quickly and learn quickly. Yeah. And the other one was not able to adjust to that life of hustling and you know, having zero. The bank rejected him, everything. So it's kind of like that's the plot of the movie. So there's a lot of stuff in there. But you're right, Doctor, in terms of what you've stated as personal life and real experiences with real humans who get devastated lives. And by the way, everybody, I mean, that we know, at a point or another, they had a devastating event in their life, whether losing someone or something that happened to them physically, even just your health. Sometimes you have a change of health and, you know, like, what the hell's going on? This is not me, right? I mean, we all feel that sometimes. I mean, I can speak to it for myself, you know. Yeah. No matter how good you think you are health-wise, something happened. That's the lower level. But you're right, something eventful that is tragedy, for example. I mean, we've had also the pandemic, you know, that's big. We have wars, you know, all these things can change people overnight. I mean, even today, you and I were laughing earlier about, you know, the world is just peachy, nothing's going on, you know, a lot of stuff going on, of course. And you know, it is determining, you know, there's a lot of stress, and we can talk about that later, you know, as this conversation goes on. So that's kind of like the plot, Doctor. So what do you think? I mean, let's dissect. I mean, what goes in the mind of the guy, the hustler, who actually got this opportunity? And I think I love what you said. You don't want to be having a million. You want to be a millionaire, because the million can be quickly spent. I mean, if you don't have money, it's going to be like, found money, let's just buy whatever I can, and it will be quick. But being a millionaire, that means you have a mind of a millionaire. That means you develop a strategy, right?
Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot of things going on here. So firstly, the evidence that I quoted came from psychologists Brinkman and Campbell, that showed that there is a genetic component and almost a set point to your happiness levels that is going to be constant. So we'll kind of get that one out of the way. But the way you described the plot to the movie to me was really interesting, because it sounded like the hustler did better in adjusting to the new life of riches than the rich guy did in adjusting to the life of hustling as a beggar, all right? There's also the other component that we've got to talk about, and that is forcing people to change their identity. And the evidence is quite clear on that one, Hurricane. None of us like to be forced into anything. So when there was a wall up in Berlin, it wasn't to try to keep people out. It was to try to keep people in, because where we have freedom, where we can express ourselves more completely, that's where we want to be. All right. So the interesting thing is, we often think that people who are down and out, who are on the streets, who have had adverse events in life, and by the way, life happens to 100% of us, but actual trauma happens to about 50% of us. So the chances of us going through something that is going to change our lives like that is really quite high. But this is the amazing thing about the brain, a hurricane. The brain can adjust and learn no matter what happens. So sometimes people think that, oh, I've had a hard childhood. Oh, I've got it bad. But this is what your brain does. Your brain will learn skills from whatever happened to you. So even if bad things happen to you, you learn skills. Now, we all know that hustlers on the street, they've got skills, right? They've got salesmanship skills. They've got persuasion skills. They've got survival skills. And they can sometimes read people much better than a psychiatrist can. right? So what I want to say to you people out there, Hurricane, is no matter what's happened to you in life, your brain can turn it around so that you can use it to do better next time. So the more of that goes on, we can actually get to a stage where we go, okay, so this has happened, but how can I use it? How can I learn from it? How can I be more myself and share more love and wisdom with people around me because of the events that have happened to me?
Wow. You know, but you know, Doctor, like, it's always amazing when I hear you and listen to you, right? We're so capable of a lot. I mean, no matter what this life throws at us, right? I mean, we are capable of really surviving. I mean, I think our survival mode is always on. I mean, it's just somewhere in the back. I mean, that we have that flight or fight, you know, mode that's always, you know, switch on, switch off. But really, I mean, it's true. I mean, the people that have, you know, a tough life, right? You know, that doesn't mean, and that's the other thing. I think there's a lot of people that may judge people for what they see, but they don't have a clue about their history in the past. I mean, and you know, I'll give you an example. I'm not sure. I know you haven't been in the city in a couple of years, but since we've met, I think it's been already 2 years, right? But it's crazy how things have, you know, evolved a little bit in Philadelphia and in LA. I mean, there's a lot more homeless, you know, presence and so on. So, and these are people that had everything probably, and they had a good life, and due to just severe circumstances, you know, sometimes people have to go to extreme levels of whatever it is. And by the way, financial stuff can happen to any one of us, and it can be devastating. Unemployment rate may affect it. I mean, there are a lot of people today. I mean, I look at social media, there's so much stuff going on about not being able to get a job, despite, you know, and there's this whole thing with the algorithms and the recruiting, you know, process. So there's a lot of stuff going on. So there's quite a bit of things that are happening to people in the same light of that movie. And, you know, people are basically just adjusting, adapting, trying to survive, and, you know, until things get better, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I've been there myself, you know, up and down in life, it happens, right? You know, you keep a certain way, but at the end of the day, it is what it is. You get dealt some cards and you got to make the best out of them, right? Yeah. But I love what you said about we don't like to be forced into things. And that's a fact. I mean, no one wants to be changed. Like, you can't. I mean, I think you and I, we had this discussion one time about the kids. You know, when you tell them everything, they saw, they can say no by default because they just don't want your opinion. They want their own thing. And that's a struggle I still have with my own kids, you know. Yeah. But that's the thing. So, but in life, you know, we have government, we have, you know, policies and political people that make decisions that we might not agree with. But, you know, again, in the democratic world, you vote for them. Now they're in the helm. They do what they have. Sometimes you disagree with the process. There's all kind of things, right? You get orders at work that you don't agree with, but you still, I think last week or last month, rather, we had the same question, like why people follow orders, you know, just because somebody's telling them what's up and because they have, a role, they just apply it without thinking. So there's a lot of stuff. So thank you for that. But then now we have the guy that actually had it all and lost it overnight. I mean, literally, it was a split second. Like he became, you know, like he had no clue how to adjust. I mean, he thought it was in a dream, literally.
Yeah.
You know, analyze that guy.
So rather than analyze that guy, I really want to go to a solution.
Okay.
Because I'm going to go into the brain because of this, because each of our brains organizes the whole universe around itself. So we're at the center of our own universe, but you know what? There are huge chunks of the brain, and I'm talking about the anterior cingulate gyrus, I'm talking about the insular cortex, I'm talking about the medial prefrontal cortex and more, that are dedicated to being linked to all our other brains. So it's true that we're all alone in this life, but it's also true that we're all together. And Hurricane, just in a week, I'm giving a talk to a big organization in Europe, where people, in a sense, have gone from the riches to, oh my gosh, we're out on the street, okay? Because there are things that are happening in this world, and a lot of them are going to be losing their jobs really quickly. So how do you get through that? So the first thing to say is that whatever experiences you've had, whoever you are, none of that can be taken away from you. So whatever your brain has achieved, whoever you have loved in your life, you have loved those people and you have achieved those things. But to get through an adverse event, something really horrible, there are two things that we've, in a way, got to put our hands up for. The first one is to know what our values are, to know what we actually value. And this is not just psychological, it's also biological, because when we make decisions, the front part of our brain, the orbitofrontal cortex, actually scours through our frontal lobe to look at what our values are to base its decisions on, right? So we need the values, we need to know what's important to us in life. And then the second thing is actually courage, right? And courage is an amazing thing, and we're just starting to research and present more of the amazing things that courage is, because courage is a choice. Courage is actually getting out there saying, I'm scared, okay? I could get hurt here, but doing something anyway. And why? Because you value it. And if you value it, you will say, no, this is the one thing that I have to go for. This is the one thing that is important to me. This is the one thing that I need to stay true to. And it's not just one thing. We've got values sort of up to 1, 10, 20. And that keeps you focused so that you've got that motivation to say, yes, on with the courage. I will face my fears and get the outcome that I want because I value it.
All right. Well, so doctor, now I want to just like one thing that's bothering me in this scenario, right? And yeah, frankly, okay. I've questioned this myself. What goes into the brains of those two guys that just decide that, you know what, why don't we just, you know, for a game, for a dollar? I mean, they just look at these people like they're just peons on a chessboard and just making moves with them without giving any thought about, you know, the impact. It's like, it's for their own satisfaction. Now, just mind you, if the ending of the movie, it's funny because they actually, those guys are going to, the hustler and the other guy are going to, you know, team up together and they're going to play against them and they're going to win them and make them lose all their shirt at the end of the day in Wall Street. So, yeah, yeah. So there is a thing that where they're going to they literally is going to go upside down with them and they wind up in the street, you know, begging themselves. But what goes into somebody, and by the way, I think this is, I mean, it's a movie that we're talking about in the context. Yeah, yeah. But really, this is real life. There are people that actually manipulating, you know, playing with people's feelings and finances, yeah, and all the stuff, just because it's, to them, it's just a game. They don't care. We see that even now. I mean, we talk a lot about social media. People are like, you know, they go on, they start criticizing people. They talk about stuff. They don't even care about what their emotions are going to look like and how, you know, and again, it's a sort of bullying. And we've talked about bullying before. At least that's yeah, in my way. So in your expertise, what does that, I mean, consist of? I mean, as a human, why would you do that? Why would you even go to that, you know, just because we have money, let's see how these people are going to play. And you just switch on. Hey, let's see what this guy's going to do. I mean, what gives you the right to do that? I mean, really?
Oh, okay. Before we get to the right, Hurricane. Thanks for that, because it grieves me that these things happen, Hurricane. But even in what we see in the world today, in one sense, they're not new problems. The problem is, and I come back to this idea by Solzhenitsyn, that we all have the line between good and evil drawn in the center of our heart. So we're all capable of good stuff and bad stuff, if you like. Okay. So I've got to go to philosophy on this, and I'm going to talk about a philosopher from the 18th century called Immanuel Kant that basically got to the stage that said, you know what's good about all of us? When we find stuff to express and we become the best you that you can be, all right? That's about the pinnacle of what you can do, what you can contribute, and you can expand yourself. But beyond that, and the philosophy since then has sort of said, yeah, okay, you sorted out a lot of things, Immanuel, but let's get into a power struggle. Now let's get into the idea that I want to put my stuff over your stuff. I want to do better than you. And when we got into the philosophy of Hegel, Marx, and Nietzsche, it actually got into this idea of us in a power struggle. And Hurricane, this is the hard part. This is the part where we like to get into a power struggle, and it means that the idea that if I do better, that means you've got to do worse. And we get into all this competition stuff. And unfortunately, we are capable of that. But, and it, a lot of it comes from the survival of the fittest idea as well, that came down from Darwin. But on the other side of the brain is all our altruism, all the parts of our brain that keep us together, all the parts of our brain that says, man, I'm in pain because you're in pain. Could I help you stop your pain and I will stop being in pain? So this is where choice comes in. We actually have a choice to either make ourselves really important or to say, you know what, our society is going in the wrong direction at the moment. Why don't we work together against it? And I'll just say one more thing before I hand it over to you, Hurricane. It's a social media thing, right? Bullying on social media happens because we do dehumanize each other. You see, you and I, at the moment, we're looking at each other, we're looking in each other's eyes, we're looking at our facial expressions, how we're behaving. And if I say something too strong and I sort of say, oh, Hurricane doesn't like that, I will see your reactions and I will do what I can so that we stay in relationship. In cyberbullying, people can write the most horrible things and they don't see the reactions so that they don't have the empathy. And so it looks like they don't care. But if somebody was right in front of them, I doubt that they would say the things that they actually say on social media.
Isn't that hypocrisy 101? I don't know. I mean, we label it.
Yeah, but it's how the brain works. We've got to be looking at each other. We've got to be close to each other to care about each other. And so on social media, you don't see a human face. You can just write things that are messages on some of our social media platforms. And we think it doesn't hurt, but it does. It hurts a lot. And we don't put ourselves in each other's shoes. And that's why social media, it's only a tool. I know it's only a tool, but we can use it for the wrong reasons.
Well, I'm glad we use it for the right reasons. At least, you know, we're delivering the good messages and some enlightening stuff here. But, you know, but again, you're right, Doc. I mean, and again, we've talked about this many times. You know, it's easier when you have no attachment to someone. But if you have a connection with someone, it becomes very difficult to say hurtful things. And, you know, I mean, I know we know there's domestic violence, there's all kind of stuff. But even at the worst extreme scenarios, people still have some sort of a live connection, as opposed to when you have no clue. You don't even know someone. You just say the word. And a lot of these people have user 12345. I mean, they don't even have a real account. You can't even tell who they are. They're just there to joke. And but what they don't understand is that literally they're hurting people. And yes, some people have actually committed suicide. We've talked about that in different shows about suicide and what drives there. I mean, you know, people don't realize, like, you know, I think you've covered this many times. The idea is that we need to, again, think human. Think that, I mean, we use the word humane with animals. I think we need to be there too. human and humane together, right? You know, for our own selves and our own species, right? You know, before we can even do that, because sometimes we just, you know, are crazy about it. And again, so this question came up on, you know, as a movie plot, but really it was a deep thing.
Very deep thing, Hurricane. Yeah, yeah.
I would suggest for you to watch it. You'll have a ball with it. You're probably going to use it even in your own, you know, work. But yeah, so I think we've spent enough time. I'm going to move to some more questions. And
I've got to finish off on one thing, Hurricane.
Oh, yes, please go ahead, Doc.
Because there is a radical solution to all of this. Okay.
Radical.
Radical. Okay. Radical. I know. Radical in the sense of being really countercultural, of doing something really new and doing something really extreme. That's helpful. Radical things can be helpful as well. Just imagine, Hurricane, if people through social media made the choice to not go onto things that were harmful on social media. So that, let's say, 90% of TikTok wasn't even watched, or that some of the posts that are out there on different platforms nobody would go to, or if the algorithms wouldn't work because people were only interested in things that were uplifting and helpful to each other. Man, oh man, Hurricane, what would happen is that all these platforms would change their algorithms to go for what people wanted. So what I'm trying to say is we all have individual choice. And if we actually could make the individual choices to click onto things that were helpful and compassionate towards each other, then all of social media would actually change. Now, I know that that is ridiculously idealistic. I know that that's not going to happen, but it shows that the power is actually in each of us as an individual. And if more and more people could make that choice, we could actually change the world, Hurricane.
Well, listen, I mean, we're trying, right? One day at a time, one show at a time.
One show at a time, one person at a time.
But doctor, you're right. I mean, by the way, I say this. I mean, I've even posted something a couple of years back. Like, listen, if you see my feed, you don't like what I'm saying, you don't have to go and take the time and the energy and time and put your comments. You don't like me. You don't have to see anything. You don't know me. You don't need to put a comment there. People sometimes feel obligated to go in and chime in. For what?
Yes.
First of all, to be honest with you, I'm at a point in my life where time is very valuable to me. I do not have time to actually go and spend time on something that is, you know, to me ridiculous or irrelevant. Yes. You know, I'm only going to go to stuff. So if I don't see something I like, I just keep scrolling up and that's it, moving on. But you're right. But what I notice is that people thrive on this thing. I mean, they kind of almost want that. They feel like it's a high. I mean, it's in its own.
Yeah. Yeah, Hurricane, the problem is that we all thrive on it because remember the psychologists that help put all these algorithms together, they know the brain much better than I do. And this thing called curiosity or morbid curiosity that we all have as human beings, okay, we get a dopamine hit from that and it feels good. So when a politician says something that outrages us, we go, "Ooh, isn't that awful?" And it makes us feel good just for a moment. And right there, we get hooked onto that clickbait. And that's why we actually need to make conscious decisions to say, "Hey, I'm going to get my kicks from things like movies like Trading Places," rather than some things that we basically know are not healthy for us. And when somebody says, "I can't help myself," you go, "Yeah, it's hard, but make the choice. You can help yourself."
Well, thank you. And, you know, I know you've already, you know, reiterated this multiple times. You know, social media is addictive. And yes, you're right. The addiction is the kick, and the kick gives the dopamine hits, and therefore you want more of that. And by the way, this is not a concept just for social media. I mean, we've heard it before in media in general. If it bleeds, it leads, right? I mean, it's an expression that's been used, you know, in that world, right? Whereby they want to show more of bad stuff. They get people attracted and more attached, and you can sell more of whatever it is.
That's right.
You know, it's kind of like it's unbelievable, like how we are. You know, and I think there's a question that may come later that touching on this. Let me see actually if I can get to it next since we're having this. Actually, this I'm going to put it as the next one here. Are you ready, doctor?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Here we go, because it's perfect segue there. And we didn't plan it that way. But Dr. Haim, I find it ridiculous that mankind is capable of great things such as innovation in all industries, even got us on the moon. Now we have AI, yet we are bent on destroying ourselves with wars and conflicts that can be avoided just as primitive species. What is the purpose of achieving it all if we are willing to destroy it all in a split second? What drives us as humanity? Sandy, SF, I guess San Francisco, right? I made you laugh. I like that.
Oh, no, well, because Sandy just wants, you know, an answer to the biggest question of all, right? You know, and that's great. That's actually what we want, because if Sandy can find the answer to that, then Sandy can move forward in the direction that they want to go, right? And that's a question. So the question is basically, look, we're capable of great stuff, and we are, but we're capable of horrible stuff as well. So how do we keep on the great stuff and not on the horrible stuff? And Sandy, that is the question that we all have to answer in ourselves. And when I'm working with individuals, what I come down to is values. Sandy, what do you value in your life? What is it that you believe is something that is worthwhile that you want to bring to fruition, that you want to get out there? And then you dedicate your life to doing that. And what happens is people will see that Sandy's doing pretty well. Sandy's reaching for something that's worthwhile. And one by one, people can move towards that. But Sandy, you're always also going to get the people that will work against that. And that's the struggle that's within ourselves and within ourselves as humanity as well.
I guess you answered it, doctor.
Oh, I don't know if I answered, Hurricane, because it's very difficult. The question still is how do we make sure, like, how do we come back from where we are to get back to that thriving, prosperous society that we had for decades and we were heading in the right direction. How do we keep that going? How do we go back to that? That's the real question. Yeah.
You know, doctor, I mean, I don't know. This is just me. I have this struggle personally. I mean, maybe I need a fix. You know, I need your help, right? But my thing is, like, I cannot get around the idea of why we can destroy ourselves as just a person. I mean, maybe again, just personally, I don't know, it's my beliefs, whatever, but like, you know, we are, like you said, it's us as human nature, but why do we, you know, again, I mean, I might tie it to religion, right? And I think there's a question that comes up after this that has to do with religion, but I believe that, you know, the more, and I think we've covered this again, if you have good beliefs, you probably going to behave better than if you don't. And so you have some sort of system in place that gives you the guidance as opposed to if you don't. So maybe that's what it is. And, you know, there's, we hear these forces, evil versus good. And I think that's, you know, in a scientific way, it's like, you know, the two sides of the brain, you know, operating against each other. And in the real sense of religion, we just have two forces. One is pushing to the other, and whatever you attach to, you get better results or worse results. At the end of the day, like, you know, and I know you've, for example, we gave the example of the Manhattan Project and, you know, why it happened. And yes, it is destructive. And now we have all this fear about nuclear. And again, that's the world we live in today. I mean, we could be, you know, last week we were debating if we're going to have World War III or not. I mean, you know, I mean, literally it sounds funny. Like, we're having a discussion just like this and, you know, it's casual, but this is serious stuff. It's happening. I mean, it's, you never know. All it takes is, you know, someone that says, you know what, the hell with it. Becomes one of those people that actually likes the carnage, or likes the radical, and in this sense, the bad radical, you know, like, you know what? Oh, I'm going to show you what's up. And then boom, it's over. It's that simple. I mean, again, we're just a conflicted, you know, species. I mean, I think animals are a lot simpler than us. They eat, they hunt when they need to eat. That's it. They don't destroy things. I think that's the case.
Yes. So what you're saying is exactly right, Hurricane. They're not as destructive as we are, but they're also not as capable of as much love as we are. And animals are capable of love. Darwin saw that. But in humans, that love can go to amazing levels. So in a way, humans are just more. I want to wind back to when you brought in religion and the principles that religion gives you to live by, okay? And that's what I call values. And that's where we all get to make our own choice as to what we value in life. And then we have to keep ourselves to it. Because if you look at the different religions, Hurricane, but look at the values that each of them espouses, they're not too far apart, okay? It's kind of love your neighbor sort of stuff, live authentically, honestly, compassion, basically do more good and evil is another thing that you mentioned. You don't even need religion to be able to have these sort of values. But it's a struggle inside all of us to do that. But together, we actually could.
Oh, man, you know, I want that to happen. I mean, really, like, you know, like how you watch the pageant, you know, competitions, and like, we want peace in the world. I mean, really, you know, it sounds like very cliche, you know, like, you know.
I know. I just sort of a line from a movie there was really a cliche where one of the contestants says, I really want world peace. I really do. You
know? Well, I mean, you know, I think, you know, like, sometimes I think that everybody, and I think you've articulated this many times, that we are that. We have the good in us. And yeah. I think it's the predominant, you know, piece of us. But we just sometimes, you know, we just get weak and the other side takes over. And, you know, it's like we are all bipolar by design. I mean, I don't know if that's using the right word there, but, you know, I don't know.
Side
disorder.
Yeah, so this idea that we've made a choice between good and evil, we've got angels on one side, devils on the other. Well, the philosopher, again, 18th century, David Hume, basically said, we've got to use reason to keep our passions under control. All right. It's when we're in emotional states that we can do things that are dangerous for all of us. And if we can keep that under control, then we can make decisions that will move us in the right direction. And so, Hurricane, you're in a relationship, you know there's going to be conflict there. So the conflict between two people, be they friends or a couple or in a family, if we could resolve that conflict, it's the same as conflict between nations. And it's not easy to resolve. But the answer is always going to be, what can I do to make the decisions to move in the right direction in my sphere of influence? And so, again, it comes down to being the best you that you can be, to live according to your values. And that takes courage to live according to your values. And if we could collectively choose that, so there was this idea in the 1960s, what if they held a war, but nobody showed up? Okay. We could actually live in a world of peace, but it just takes everybody to make that decision. And it takes one bad apple to say, nah, I'm going to head us in the wrong direction. Then unfortunately we're vulnerable to that. Well, so you know, it's a problem that we have to keep on top of all the time.
Well, it is. I mean, and listen, I'm sure there's a lot of people that work in just not you and I on this. I mean, many people are trying their best. But, you know, historically, we have proven elements in history that shows that no matter how people try to destroy it, there's always, we overcome that and we become better. But again, you know, it's not hidden that we've had elements throughout the history that cause chaos and destruction and, you know, killed, you know, in countless lives and so on and so forth. But also, I mean, in the context of movies, you know, I remember also a movie that, like, I mean, I used to be a movie buff, and I love these things. And I used them in trainings too, you know, for various reasons. But there was a movie called Demolition Man with Sylvester Stallone. And in that movie, it was kind of like, you know, the war happened, and then they kind of banned everything in the future. And so you don't have weapons and people are living peaceful life and they don't know what violence is. But then someone created, you know, like got one of these guys that was hibernating in some sort of a chamber in prison and brought him back to life. And they started chaos, right? It's almost like, you know, whenever you think about a positive world where it's quiet, there's almost a need of the negative, you know, polar, you know, vibe. And I'm not sure why that's the place. And yeah, it's a movie, but it's kind of the real thing. It's always the same.
It is the real thing. And it's very interesting that we're on the brink of World War III, about 80 years after the end of World War II, because that's about a full lifetime. And so what is relevant is memory. Because there were so many people that remembered how destructive World War II was, they thought, you know what, we don't want to go here again, which is why they came up with this idea of a European song contest, because if we have little battles over who makes the best song, that would be rather safe rather than having battles on the ground. But in 80 years, it means that you've got a generation of people that don't remember World War II, which means they haven't grappled with this idea of power inside themselves and power that can lead to destruction. So it's not part of their identity. And obviously, you and I and almost everybody in this world will hope that it doesn't take World War III to get to the lesson again that, you know, maybe we should be able to conquer this. But unfortunately, because it's something inside all of us, it's something that we need to conquer ourselves. The idea of memory and that 80 years is about what it takes before people forget how destructive war can be is relevant in the current situation.
Yeah, Doctor, I'm sorry. I'm listening to you. Something popped in my mind. It might be the craziest thing, but, you know, 80 years ago, World War II, and it was devastating. But World War III is not going to be the same if it happens. This is like you press a couple of buttons and then poof, everything, you know, becomes gone. It is not like where you have to send troops and, you know, maybe there is a chance of survival. This is it. This is checkmate, you know, as they would say, right? It is not, you know, something that we can even fathom. But you're right, Doctor. If these people that maybe now not even seeing or relating to that, or maybe so far apart of it that they don't remember what that devastation is, because anyone who had lived that would probably not even be, you know, close to the idea of having another war. Or anybody that's experienced war, I think, will not want to be anywhere in that environment, knowing what it is and the devastation and the trauma that comes with it, and just the toll that takes. I mean, but this is crazy. Now, I was laughing, Doc. It's not that. I mean, I'm talking to you, But, you know, I have a question, and I'm not sure there's an answer to it. But, I mean, do these elected officials or presidents and, you know, world leaders have a mental check? I mean, you know, because, you know, I don't know. Maybe they should have a, you know, mandatory thing, because if you're not, you know, if you have something that's conflicting, or you have some sort of a personal thing or vendetta, whatever, I mean, how do we defend against that? I mean, that's just a question. I mean, that comes to mind.
No, it's a good question, Hurricane, but I've got to go to the premise of the question, because what we do is sometimes as people, we think it's other people that are making all the mistakes and that we're okay, right? Mm. And Hurricane, it's hard for any of us to imagine what it would be like if we had a lot of power. So if we were actually the leaders of a nation, of millions of people, would we be able to handle that kind of power? And so what I'm saying is, we would actually have the same problems, and hopefully that we would make the right decisions, and we think that we would, but we have to go through the same problems that all our leaders do, which is why it's a problem of humanity rather than those bad people. This is all a reflection of us. But because this actually creates a lot of anxiety for people, all right? Sort of, we were just talking about destruction of World War III, okay? How are we going to get back from the brink of what we're doing? And people can despair in that. So what I like to do is give people hope for what they themselves can do. And the answer in your own life is to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. Because there are some things that we as individuals can't influence, but make sure that you make decisions so that you can say, well, I did my best and I wanted to do what I can to be part of the solution. So I was proud of Australia last week, okay? Because Australia is giving this little island nation in the South Pacific visas because their country is starting to go under because of climate change. So now we're giving visas to people to just come over and move to Australia, basically to save people from this nation, okay? So that's part of the solution. Now, part of the solution for a country, a small country of influence like Australia, is doing things like that. Part of your solution as a person might be to find not only just a cause to work with, but to find somebody that you've got conflict with and say, hey, can we just do a little bit better? Can we make sure that we're not at war? And through these little acts of kindness and service and understanding in our sphere of influence, you're going to be part of the solution. So if World War III happens, you are on the right side, okay? It wasn't your fault. You know, you are doing what you can to keep the love and the kindness flowing. Well, sometimes that's got to be what it takes, yeah.
Listen, we're going to keep doing. I mean, we're on a mission, literally. I mean, that's our mission, to align, educate, inspire, and motivate, you know, make some change, keep a legacy here, you know. But certainly, I mean, that's not something like you would entertain. But it does get scary to a point. But by the way, I want to say, you know, congratulations to Australia in a lot of ways. I mean, you guys are a lot more diplomatic and quieter in the front of all this nonsense that goes around the world, and that's a good thing. By the way, I did actually look at a study, and you guys are probably in the safest zone in the world. If it all goes to hell, you guys are still going to be good. I mean, literally, the whole North Hemisphere is chaotic. You guys are way out there. You know, like, what the hell happened there? I mean, it'll be just you guys left. But, you know, it's amazing, right? You know, we're having a joke about this, but, you know, that shows you, like, you know, you pay attention, you know, there's a lot of stuff, like, a lot of talk about these things, and it creates a lot of unease. I mean, I think, you know, just a couple, you know, weeks ago, you know, you go to TikTok or Instagram, there's a lot of stuff, nuclear war, this, that, the other. I even posted some stuff about just, you know, medical stuff, about what it means and, you know, things that you have to have, whatever. Because, you know, I mean, you don't know what the hell's going on. I mean, it happened in a sudden. I mean, you know, we were here. Oops, we have planes and, you know, things. I mean, people are watching missiles, you know, going over their heads, you know, while having a party. I mean, there was a big TikTok, you know, reel with this guy playing a saxophone, and these guys are just, you know, watching the missiles go from Iran to Israel. I mean, it's like, what the hell? I mean, what's the world coming to? But that just, It looks like I'm seeing a movie, you know, like one of those Terminator movies. But yeah. it's like we live in the time, and it's all it takes is the wrong one to be up there and it's over, right? So it's amazing that, you know, it's so simple, yet it's so devastating and dangerous just to even think about it. And people are probably like, well, Hurricane, what the hell's wrong with you talking about this? I'm just, you know, it's these are the questions that we get. But the idea is that this is serious stuff, and we got to sometimes deal with it in a way that makes us cope.
Yeah, we do. Okay. And okay, so we talked about what Australia, which is a relatively small nation, has been doing right. But let's give a shout out to the USA, okay, because after the squabbles in Europe in World War II, it's actually the USA that kept the world safe for a good 70 years or more, right? So there's a lot that the USA was doing to keep the whole world safe. And because the USA is a large nation, it is able to do a lot of large good for the whole world. So the thing is that the things that go on in our own hearts and minds, if you like, then play out on the world stage. So the idea is that the USA still has the power to be able to bring us back to a world of stability, okay? It is a whole lot more complex, and I am looking for the hope because the hope is still there. But the main message is, Hurricane, we are in this together as a whole world now, and we've got to be able to work that out for our own survival and good.
You know, amen to that. I mean, all the way. This is not something I want to entertain even as an idea. But again, you know, we come close to these are close calls sometimes, and you know, it takes emotions on both sides, and someone can go nuts. Luckily, I mean, we didn't get to the extreme, and I think it's diffusing. So that's a good news right now. I mean, at least for what we know and we see. And you're right. I mean, it is a large country, you know, and by the way, 4th of July is coming. So yeah, that comes in a good, you know, thank you for that. Yeah,
that's good. But also, if we look at the Middle East in particular, all right, there were twice that we brought the Middle East back away from the brink of war. And that was at the Camp David Accords in the 70s and then the Oslo Accords in the 90s. And in both situations, the USA were instrumental in that. But there's another wonderful thing about that, because it came to the whole world conflict being played out between individuals, two people, two leaders being in the same hotel together. And they had actually secret talks in Oslo before they actually brought something together officially for the nations. It really is individuals playing out things that can affect the whole world. And so the solution to this current crisis is going to be the same, to get people back to a negotiating table, back to sort of diplomacy, back to talking about, hey, you listen to my story and I'll listen to your story. We'll find out that we're human beings together and that firing missiles at each other is not the way forward for either of us. And that's what happened at both of those summits. And it can happen again, Hurricane. It can. We've got a long way to go, but we can get there.
Well, listen, you and I are very hopeful. And we hope that, you know, a lot of people get the same message and hopefully support that. And, you know, and again, it's not in our hands. It's in the hands of the people that make the decision. But I do want to go to what you just said. As you're right, it's easier to talk about it, but being in those shoes of those leaders is a whole different ball game. As a matter of fact, I don't know if I mentioned to you, but I know I've used this in a couple of shows. I watch a lot of tragedy movies and like, you know, what do you call it? Disaster movies and war movies. I put myself in their situation, meaning that I start like, you know, who would I be, this guy or that guy? You know, what would I have done if this was, and it's a question I actually ask. And it's scary sometimes when you're actually like, what would I have done? You know, and sometimes you wind up in a good position where you actually made the right call, but sometimes I made the bad calls. So I can tell you, I think we all are capable of doing the wrong thing. You know, if you think, because we think it from our angle, we don't look at all the aspects, and it's very difficult, especially we have a lot of influence and manipulation and ideologies and stuff like that. It can be just a, you know, very conflicting in itself. So it's not easy, you know, to be a leader. And as a matter of fact, You know, sometimes you have, you know, kingdoms, for example, and being a king, you know, that's like, it's not, you didn't pick it up. I mean, you were born into it and you have no choice. You have to deal with it. You know, I mean, like, it's not an easy, you know, place to be as an authority, right? You know, I mean, with the elected, you know, ones, it's one thing. I mean, you volunteer, you kind of put yourself in the election. But let's say for kingdoms, you know, you're just born as a sovereign, so, you know, as a, I guess, a royalty. And now your job is you're going to be a prince and eventually you're going to lead a nation. How the hell do you do that? I mean, it's tough. I mean, it's like, it's, that's like, you know, and it's for life. That's the other thing. It's not even like for a term. I mean, at least for like some of the, you know, more democratic or like republics, you know, it's different because you can change your leadership over a period of time. So, but even 4 years, I mean, I've seen presidents come in with no white hair, come out with a whole white, you know, set. That just shows the pressure. I mean, there's no reason why that happens except for a lot of stress, right? So it is not easy to be in these shoes. And certainly, you know, we can all talk about whatever. I mean, we don't have to go to even the world of politics. We can go to the world of business. You're running a business. It's tough. I mean, you know, you have all these things that you have to manage, from protocols, from policies, from money, from, you know, I don't know. I mean, everything, the legal, this, that, the other. So it's a lot of stuff. It can get, you know, very crazy.
Oh, it's very complex. But so the world becomes an arena, our business or our family life or the study that we do, whatever it is that life calls upon us to do. It becomes an arena where conflicts of the mind get played out. And that's why I'm encouraging people to know what their values are and to have the courage to live by your values, because it isn't always easy. And so I'm going to give a little acronym, Hurricane.
I love those.
I think I've given this one before because it's an important one. You've got to get into the world armed with your values. A-R-M-E-D, to know what your values are. What is it that you admire in yourself and other people is the A. The R, what do I think is the right thing for me to do? The M is what motivates me to do well. The E, I've just forgotten right now. The E is, no, where do I get my energy? Okay. And the D is, if I had to die really soon, what would become really important to me all of a sudden? Okay, so if you were given that diagnosis of you're only here for 6 months, there'll be some things that'll become really important to you really quickly. So using those five things to be armed with your values, what do I admire? What motivates me? What do I think is the right thing to do? Where do I get my energy? And what would happen if I got that diagnosis? That points you in the directions of your values. And once you know your top values, right, now you've got to have the courage to say, this is how I'm going to live my life. And that's not easy, Hurricane. That's not easy.
Well, thank you for the acronym, and I love it. I mean, it's, and we're probably going to have to share this particular one as a reel, because it's powerful, you know, to take home. You know, anybody can actually see it and use it and apply it. But I do have one thing that's going to probably drive people nuts right now, is like, you talked about that diagnosis. I think that diagnosis is given to all of us when we are born. I mean, you know, we know that we're going to be gone. It's just a matter of time, right? It's not 6 months, but nobody knows, right? So every day is just a good day on earth, as, you know, above ground, as they say. But we don't know that. So technically, if we use just that in its own, I mean, and start valuing life differently because we don't know if we're going to be here, I think that can change just the way we do things as well, right?
Hurricane, but strangely enough, it doesn't work as a motivator, because we know scientifically the brain ends up with the feeling that it's going to live forever, all right? We all know rationally that that's not true, but we feel that. The only people that don't feel that are the people who are given a cancer diagnosis, okay, that have had a scare in a car accident or have had a heart attack, that know their mortality, and then they can make big changes. But I've treated a lot of people who've been in those situations, and the brain will go back to that idea that it's going to live forever. So although rationally we know that what you're saying is true, we live from a sense of our feeling self of how we actually are. And to overcome that, we need to remind ourselves that what you're saying is actually true. We're only here for a short period of time. Let's make the most of it, and also the best of it, so that we can be the best you that you can be.
You know, doctor, you know, it's funny because when you said that, it kind of clicked. I mean, you're right. People kind of, we're almost in denial, right? We don't want to believe that that's happening. It is happening, but we don't want to kind of even entertain the idea. That's why a lot of people don't even talk about it. And you know, I mean, we avoid that discussion. You talk about that, nobody wants to hear it, right? It's like it's like the reminder that no one wants to have, right? But you know, it is a fact, though. It is part of life, and it's the only certain thing in life is death. I mean, it's as sad as it sounds, right? And sometimes by just recognizing that, I think we can, it could be a motivator, but it takes a lot of energy to bring that up all the time and realize it, right? It's kind of weird, but it's part of it, right? Unfortunately. But you're right. It's, you understand it from the science and how we all operate. So it's, the ideology is one thing, the rationality is one thing, but how we function is just what it is. And we are also forgetful. So the minute you get no pain, you're like, you know, that's nothing is going on. I mean, it's just like life goes on. And which is a good thing. I think that's hope. And it's important in life to keep that hope, you know, because it can have positive outcomes as well. So, I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's, there's no right or wrong about it. It's just a matter of understanding what to do and roll with the punches. But I do have to say this, Dr. Cook, I'm sorry, is that an exercise I do is that sometimes I just kind of review my own life, you know, and I've done this and I've asked people to do this. It's very simple. Close your eyes and visualize your life to this point. It's going to take about a minute to review all of it. it sounds crazy, but, you know, I've done it. It doesn't take more than a minute, maybe 2 minutes, to literally see yourself from when you were a baby, when you remember, to today, whatever that moment is. And it's just like, it's a flash. I mean, it's just like, that's as quickly as that is. I mean, and it's scary because then you start calculating like what my age is and what are the odds of me making it twice again what I've been. And you start thinking like, whoops, this is not looking good.
Yeah, that's a really good exercise, Hurricane. That's a really good thing to do. And what I'd add to that is for people to be grateful for life itself. So when you say, this is my life, this is what I've done, to say, thanks. That's what my life has been. And you don't have to be religious to be grateful. So Stephen Hawkins, who was a professed atheist, just before he died, he sort of said, I have had 75 years to see the miracle of life. And for that, I am extremely grateful. So when you go to an area of gratitude, there's a warmth that comes from that and a hope that, you know what, all told, as even though we've got problem after problem, life is actually an amazing experience. And then what happens is it becomes precious enough for you to say, okay, I want to make the most of it. What does that mean to me? That means going to your values. How do I do it? That's what takes the courage.
I think if everybody does that, I don't think we'll think about war and crazy. We just think about ourselves and how to live better and have a better life. That would change the whole world, right, if we're all there. But let's hope. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you know, messages out there, people are trying their best and, you know, maybe we can make a slight difference and, you know, and hey, who knows? But you're right, doctor. If you're grateful, if we are all grateful of what we had, where we are, I mean, you're breathing. I think we talked about even last time is if you're healthy, you're not fearful of your, you know, for your life, you got place to live, to sleep, you know, what to eat, and then you got some clothing, you're good. I mean, you're at least for the day. And if it can repeat itself over and over and you have no problems with no one, that's a good place to be. And it keeps the hope going, you know, forward that, you know, you're going to live in that same spin and that's it. Wow.
I just want to add one more thing as an exercise that people can do. When they get fearful, when they get despondent, when they look at the world and they go, you know what, we're heading in the right direction. Because in that state, to just take a minute to close your eyes wherever you are and say, I am safe now. I am breathing right now. I have life right now. And I am grateful for it. And right there, you're getting your reason mind to control those emotions that can sometimes get out of control. And then you can say, right, onward, what do I need the courage to do to keep going for to keep going forward in life?
Well, yeah, doctor, it's funny that you're saying this. This is where you remember one time I had said, like, we need a primary care mental health doctor in our lives. I think, you know, really, we got to adopt this. People, if you watch it, listen, I don't care, today, in 100 years, 50 years, whatever, sooner than later, of course, you know, maybe this is something that we need to make as an official thing. Like, because we might get lost in translation, whatever the word expression is in life, you know, maybe by having that checkpoint, you know, as we do for our physical, we'll do that for mental, and hopefully we'll be kind of reminded of these things and these tools to operate. Imagine if we did this every quarter, every 6 months, I think we'll have no problems, you know, because I think we'll be able to manage better. Because I think what people do is they just keep going, and all that stuff is just, you know, there's nutrition and it adds up, and it just, you know, eventually it's too much as a burden, too much weight, and people just kind of go nuts and they do things, you know, and that's where depression, anxiety, suicide, all the bad stuff, even, you know, crime happens, you know, because people are so stressed. So, I mean, again, I think that's just a wishful thing, but maybe, listen, you know, I know, for example, in the insurance space, at least in the States, mental health is covered as a behavioral thing, you know, if you need it, but it's not a primary thing. I think doctors should just, you know, add that, like you have to have a physical, you have to have a mental check every 6 months. You know, I mean, why not? It's really, you know, that's the thing. Like, we think about health, but mental health is usually like on a secondary phase. Yet it is more prominent, I think, and more powerful. I think if this is good, everything else feels good. I mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, doctor.
Okay.
You know, people have, you know, this, I think I've read it before, where people have, they showed symptoms of physical illness because of the mental, you know, status. And as soon as their mental health is better, there was no physical presence of an illness, yet they felt pain, they felt this, because it was all mental.
So that's one of the big insights that we in psychiatry discovered about 130 years ago, that if you can actually release and resolve the conflict that's in the mind, then symptoms that are there in the body would actually go away. So what you're saying, Hurricane, is totally right.
You know, so that whole meditation and focus and brain, like, you know, we hear in the monasteries and some ancient arts, it does work. I mean, you kind of get your mind to psyche out your body, and then the pain goes away. Kind of like hypnosis, right? And I've seen that happen in hypnosis, where someone can literally have pain and feel no pain once they get through a session. Because, I mean,
Okay, so what you're saying is right, Hurricane. It can be done in hypnosis. It can be done in psychotherapy. The easiest way to do it is as a mindfulness technique, and I'm going to the techniques of John Kabat-Zinn, who's a psychologist from Canada, and he has a technique called a body scan. And all that it means is that you sit in a chair, you close your eyes, and in your mind, you go through every area of the body, and you are thankful for that area, and you ask that area to let go of any tension, and you're actually scanning through your body to see if there is any disease or any tension that you could let go of. And we're finding that that act physically makes a difference. It physically increases your immune system so that your body does actually, in a sense, let go of disease.
Well, there goes radiology for
you. Sorry, it's a radiology technique. Well, but if you need a scan from radiology, get that too, all right? Because sometimes you need the doctor and stuff.
Of course. I was just joking. But you know, it's funny because I'm laughing because I just thought about it for a second. I think I need to do that scan because a lot of pain in the body. Yeah, you know, so folks, I mean, again, this is really we have some funny, you know, little comebacks here, but really the core of it is really value here. And it's techniques, tools to help us cope with real stuff. And the world is real. Things around us, and it's affecting us, and it's affecting our relationship with everybody, especially in the way we operate these days. And on social media, we spend a little more time in there. And, you know, we're hearing all the stuff that, and by the way, most of it, or maybe a good percentage of it, is not real. People just throw in stuff, and because they want reviews and views and whatever, leads and followers. And it becomes a little bit of a trendy thing that can affect us, you know, and really give us the wrong information. Am I correct, Doctor?
Yeah, you're totally correct, Hurricane. And I do want to leave people with a little challenge, because when we talk about these techniques, you know, the body scan, a bit of gratitude or some mindfulness, people go, oh my God, where am I going to get time to do all of this? Okay. So we're talking about only about 5 or 10 minutes a day. And if you look at your social media use and say, what am I looking at on the internet or in social media that I could actually do without? Can I find 10 minutes to do without one visit somewhere and to turn the screens off and just do a body scan, or just do a small bit of gratitude, or just do a mindfulness release? And it's actually quite difficult to do that. So don't be down on yourself if you find it difficult. But once you're able to conquer that with your courage, you'll find that you've got more space to live out of your values.
I think we've exceeded an hour, and I'm not going to add anything else, because that's powerful right there to just leave, you know, today's, you know, session with folks. I mean, it's, you know, we have armed and we have the technique of scanning your body. That's two powerful tools to take home and share with others. And of course, if you know someone, I think we all know someone that can use these things, and if not us, you know, as primary. So yeah, that's it. So, well, Doctor, I mean, we only covered two questions literally. But it took the hour. I mean, we had, you know, some rich discussion, I think. Yeah. You know, it's, as always, it's phenomenal. I get this great energy from this particular discussion here, and I get a lot of that, you know, real core information and value that you actually bring in, Doctor, that helps. I mean, I'm telling you, it's like, I'm lucky. I mean, I do have to say that. I mean, I always say that I'm the first customer of my own shows and my own, you know, so I get the first dibs, but it really works, because this stuff I apply, whether it's the business stuff that I, you know, exchange with other, you know, experts, it helps me, you know, build some of the stuff and how I operate. Same thing here with the mental health. I mean, this show has been one of the greatest things that happened to my life personally. And I thank you, Doctor, for your trust as always and really bringing your wealth of expertise. And again, I follow you, and I love those you know reels that you put out there and all the stuff. I mean, you give these nice little segments about things and small things that actually can make a difference. And I think sometimes we just need to hear it to apply it, and hopefully we'll be better. And then that's all. And that's, we got to help each other somehow. This is a good way to do that.
Yeah, we do, Hurricane. And thanks for all of that. But I got to let everybody know that I have just as much problems applying this stuff as anybody else does. So if you're finding some of this stuff difficult to apply, yeah, I understand, because I do too. So I have to listen to the things that we talk about here on Hurricane so that I can move forward in my life as well. So in that, we're all in the same boat.
Well, that's it, folks. I mean, you know, I've taken a little bit more time from Doctor today, but hey, it was worth it. So Doctor, I just want to thank you again for being with us, and we will be back next month, end of the, so it's the last Friday of every month, so July, end of July. So let's stay tuned for the next one. And again, do send your questions. We have a whole bunch more left, but we do appreciate, you know, the more you send us, and if it's a priority, whatever. And again, you can come on to the show if you wanted. If you actually send us an email, if you want to be on as a guest, or you want to interact with Dr. Live, and you want to even come in and throw in some on your own version of things, and let's see how we can you know, make that happen. The more interactive we are, I mean, we can get more information from someone out there, will be great. And let's see if you have a challenge, bring it on. I mean, if you're supportive, whatever, you know, and then you think that the psychology, you know, is not the way, or the way, or can help or not help, whatever. I mean, again, Doctor, what do you think? Is that good? Is that something we can do?
That sounds fine with me, Hurricane.
All right. So Doctor is ready for the challenge. All right, folks, that's about it. I'm Hurricane Ainge. You've been watching Climb to Your Prime with Dr. Haim. This is our June edition. So we'll be talking soon in July. Bye for now.